Friends are listening to Irish Radio Network, USA, irishradio.com, worldwide. The very special guest today, and he is the CEO and President of Northwell Health. 21 hospitals, 890 outpatient facilities, 16,600 affiliated physicians care for over 2 million patients annually, serving primarily New York City, Long Island, and Westchester County. It is New York State's largest healthcare provider. Mike Dowling, you are indeed very welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you, and thank you for inviting me again.
Well, the timing of this, and we also thank you for being, our go-to person in, particularly in healthcare and related topics. This is a week in America. God knows we should be used to it by now, but I think that this week caps all, as it were. You know, with now 70 mass shootings so far this year, and this week another shocking school shooting took place in Nashville, Tennessee, in a private Christian school. Are we even close to, you know, taking this as, you know, one more headline that we see, every day, hear about, read about? Where are we as a nation, in your estimation?
I think with regard to this issue, I don't think we're in a good place at all. I think that there is complete unwillingness to act at the federal government to deal with the severity of this issue. We seem to be addicted to the availability of guns. And while I am not an opponent of the Second Amendment, and I am not against gun ownership, I think we have to do an awful lot more to be able to control the negative outcomes of having a gun. I think that we've got to make sure that only those who should legitimately have a gun get it. In the Nashville issue, I find it absolutely atrocious that a person is able to get access to an assault weapon. Why you would need an assault weapon unless you're in the police or in the military is beyond me. You have companies out there, gun manufacturers, that are selling what's known as ghost guns. So you can buy them over the mail and put parts of them over the mail and put them together. I think it's a horrific situation. I think we need to, we need some law changes to make sure that we curtail who can get a gun. I think we need to elevate and accelerate our efforts around prevention and safety, which is what we're trying to do here at Northwell, and I've been taking somewhat of a lead on this issue. This is not what the United States should be known for. This is not a distinctive characteristic that we should be proud of. It's a major, major public health issue. And the statistic that shocks most people when I talk about it is that guns are the leading cause of death among children and adolescents. I mean, the second leading cause of death is automobile accidents, and the third leading cause of death is cancer. So I think we have got to take a public health approach to this, just like we made cars safer when deaths from car accidents was huge one time. We just didn't get rid of cars. We just figured out how to make cars safer and put a lot of new rules in place to manage the fatalities resulting from automobiles. I think we have to use the same tactic here. It's in enhancing awareness, enhancing education, eliminating the ability to get assault weapons, controlling who can get a gun. But when in answer to your question, that doesn't seem to be the desire nationally. I mean, the president is making statements on this, but he needs congressional action. And I don't see that there's going to be any constructive action in Congress, despite the fact that there are individual members in Congress who want to do something. But overall, I don't see that there is any inevitable response coming quickly. That does not mean that the rest of us should not be continuing to talk about the unbelievably terrible situation this is. We are better than this as a country. We've got to project a better image. And by the way, one last comment, Adrian. Mass shootings get a lot of attention, but mass shootings are less than 2% of overall deaths and homicide from guns. It's a small component of the mortality from guns. They get a lot of attention, but the problem is the one-offs on an ongoing basis around the country each and every day. And so this is something we've got to fix, but I think it's going to take all of us working together with a consistent message to improve safety, access, and prevention.
You have initiated quite a few policies that some would say are not directly associated with health care. And how do you tackle, a project like this where people say, oh, my God, you can't do that, in a very, disruptive and politically divided, United States? The minute you say, if you're pro-gun or anti-gun, you're almost identifying, waving the red rag in front of the bull, so to speak.
Yeah.
When you embarked on this yourself, how did you get others to join with you? And did many of them in the beginning say, no, slow down here now, because there is enough Riro August Rulia Bulia, as we might say at home, without injecting something which instantly has, a political division profile, and that's over the top?
Well, to me, this is a public health issue. When guns become the leading cause of death among kids, it's a health issue. When we see gun victims showing up in our emergency departments, when we see families showing up in our emergency departments and in our hospitals, when we see people with mental health problems as a result showing up in our psychiatric facilities, this is a health issue. This is about the safety of our communities, the safety of our families and our kids. So it is a health issue. And when I started, obviously people said to me, why don't you stay in your lane? This is not a health issue. Those people are completely wrong. It is a health issue. And so that's why I focus on prevention and safety, and I talk about it as a health issue. I do not take issue with the Second Amendment, right? I believe very, very strongly, as has been demonstrated in poll after poll, that the vast majority of legitimate gun owners are all in favor of reducing the negative and inappropriate consequences of inappropriate gun ownership. They're all for safety and prevention. So I am not against gun ownership. I am for safety. When I started it, I got very few people interested in participating, but things have changed. I now have about 55 of the leading CEOs, healthcare CEOs in the United States, that have joined a CEO council on gun prevention and safety, and have put their signatures to the effort. And these are CEOs from Texas, Mississippi, Alabama, Chicago, California, New York, all over. So things have changed. When I started, I could get nobody involved. Today, there is an outpouring. We had a meeting in New York about 3 weeks ago, a national forum. We had 150 of the top people from the country show up, and we had about 2,000 people on Zoom. And so I see a shift in attitude, an appropriate shift, not surprising, because at the end of the day, people care about what's good for their kids and their community. So I shy away from getting caught in the negative politics of it. Mm-hmm. And I don't get into debate about whether you should have a gun or not. I say to you, if you're going to have a gun, there should be procedures to make sure that only people who are approved to get a gun should get a gun. You should not be able to walk into a store without any requirement whatsoever and buy a gun. You can't go into an automobile store, rent the car, and drive it out without a license. Why should you be able to go into a store, buy a gun, and walk out with no requirements? It is insane. I think we need to speak up about it, not be afraid of it, and not be worried about getting some people annoyed with you, because if you do, as you know, Adrian, if you do anything new, people are going to get annoyed. You just have to be able to tolerate it and deal with it.
You know, a point you made earlier about, you know, more than 70 mass killings. You know, in the most recent survey, actually not a survey, but a report for the first 3 months of this year, we just incredibly have passed a point, not to believe it or not, issue, more than 10,000 kids under 21 have been shot since the beginning of the year. That is absolutely outrageous in the sense that, as I say, yes, a mass shooting will get, you know, the headlines will get, you know, to our attention almost instantly, if, you know, for the shock value. But to think that 10,000 so far in the first 3 months because of guns, let's just put it that way, is something that, again, is huge. Is it possible that if we wind up with less than, you know, 70 mass shootings this time next year, everybody would say, well, this must be working?
No, I don't think. This is why we've got to look at it as more than just mass shootings, as terrible as those are. In our children's hospital, in the last 12 months, we have seen almost a 400% increase in the number of kids showing up at the hospital as a result of gun injuries. We've had a number of fatalities, and we've not had a mass shooting in here in the New York area, fortunately, and hopefully we never will.
Yeah.
So to me, this is a major national issue that requires a national solution. Individual states are taking a lot of action, but it's a cultural issue. We, somehow or another, we believe that the right for anybody just to walk around with a gun is appropriate. I don't believe it's appropriate. I believe it's unsafe. It doesn't make you more secure. It causes extraordinary economic and human damage. And this is why I and a lot of other healthcare leaders at the moment are basically saying, we see the results of this. It's not a victim-free initiative. When you have a situation like the one you had, I think it was in Virginia, where a six-year-old boy walked into his teacher's classroom with a gun that he picked up that was in his home and shot his teacher, 6 years old. Now, we have a major campaign, including TV ads, that basically says, if you have a gun in the home, please lock it up. It should not be allowed to sit around and be available for other people just to get it and do terrible damage. These are the kinds of actions, as small as they may appear, that we've got to continue to work on. And the public has to begin standing up and saying, despite the fact that, I might be in favor of gun ownership, I'm not challenging the Second Amendment, but the results of the inappropriate access to guns by people who shouldn't have them and the inability of people to keep them safe when they have them is resulting in extraordinary damage to our families and our children. It's a children's issue. So we have to become unbelievably annoyed and angry about this. This is not what the United States should represent. This is not what other countries should, when you've traveled outside the United States, that are fascinated and appalled at the fact that we have so many deaths by kids from guns. Deaths of kids from guns. It's a distinctive characteristic that we should be ashamed of. We are unique in this regard. This is not why we should be unique. We should be unique for our excellence, for our commitment to science, for our innovation, for our business, and for having public policies that make sense, not the ones that we currently have, in my view, that make little sense. So at the end of the day, the public has to recoil against this. And I think over time, it will happen. But it will only happen if leadership, and I believe the CEOs of every business, and many of them are, but the CEOs of every business should be out there saying, this has got to stop. It's unacceptable. It's not who we are. And we've got to force our leadership to take action, despite the lobbying efforts of the gun lobby. And again, sell guns to people who legitimately should have them, not right. Make them available through the mail so you at home can put very disastrous weapons together. Just don't think about it of your own personal economic advantage. Think about the damage you're doing to the community overall.
There are some closer to home, and obviously I agree with your analysis and pathway forward on this. One of the suggestions which has come, from Northwell or your organization is the importance of taking your kids, dropping them off at a friend's house, yeah. And having what it takes to say to the host of that group, by the way, do you have a gun in the house?
Right.
That's a change in attitude that, like everything else, there will be people who say, what has it got to do with you? It has everything to do.
Well, if you just think of it, and I mean, this is very logical. If you have a child and your child is going to a neighbor's house and the neighbor has a cat and your child is allergic to the cat or is allergic to cats, you're going to ask the neighbor, do you have a cat? So am I safe? My kid can be safe. If you send a kid to the house and there is, a dog in the house, you want to know, is it safe to have my kid be around the dog?
Right.
What's different between that and saying to somebody, if you have a gun or not? We're not questioning whether you should have a gun or not. We ask, do you have a gun? Is it locked up?
Yeah.
I don't want my kid in your house if there is a gun laying on the couch or in an open area easily accessible,
right.
Especially with kids in the house. Who could be against this? Anybody that's against this kind of thing is completely illogical.
Right.
It's human decency. Take out of harm's way. By the way, I'll use another analogy. If you're have a swimming pool, or you want to build a swimming pool,
right.
In New York at least, and I know it's similar in many other states, you've got to go through a series of major regulations and approvals. You have to put a fence around the swimming pool. Why do you put a fence around the swimming pool? To make sure that a neighbor's kid doesn't walk over, fall into the swimming pool, and drown. We're heavily regulated. Yet, it seems to some people to be okay to say you can have a gun at home and it shouldn't be locked up. That's insane. Now, legitimate gun owners, and we work with gun owners, and these are good people, vast majority are good people who want the same thing. Legitimate gun owners who care about the safety of kids will have their guns locked up. But not everybody's like that. And if everybody became careful with this, we'd have less damage. You'd have less potential suicides, etc. So this is a very simple message. And by the way, since we've been airing the ad on TV, Right. We have seen an improved awareness. It is making a positive difference. So I'm not pessimistic in the long run about this. I think that good work and continuous commitment by good people in influential positions will eventually change the tune here and make things better over the long haul. Just like, remember in the old days when Ralph Nader came out years and years and years ago and said to reduce deaths from car accidents, we should have seatbelts and airbags. And everybody said, you're crazy. Nobody will have a seatbelt. Nobody will have an airbag.
Sure.
Car manufacturers won't build them. Everybody thought it was nuts. Well, look at it today. You cannot buy a car without a seatbelt or an airbag. So the same will happen with guns over time. So for those of us involved, we cannot get pessimistic. We cannot throw up the white towel and say, we are defeated. You cannot do that. You've got to stick with it. It's a long haul, and we can take appropriate actions to still have guns, have legitimate ownership of guns, and still have it safe. That's the ultimate goal.
Mike, darling, first of all, thank you for your time. And the total number is ever increasing of 83,000 employees throughout your healthcare facilities. The message is loud and clear, and in fact, you are being listened to. This is not your first attempt at pointing out some logical steps to, in the interests of everybody, not just those in Northwell Health.
Sure.
Leading through a pandemic, your last book, that would say, it's the inside story of humanity, of innovation, lessons learned, again, during the COVID-19 period. It would take, some would say a lot of guts to say, wait a minute, what do we learn from that? We learned how to get through it. There is some, there are those, and many of us throughout the world, that would say, listen, that was a once-off, and, let's move on. And the day they say there isn't one more case, of COVID left in the world, we'll be fine, thank you. What is the reaction to, taking a topic like that and actually sending it and sending that message to people who already feel that they have the expertise and that's how they run their healthcare facilities?
Well, I mean, to me, if you're in a leadership position, you have a special obligation and responsibility. You have got to continue to use your role to do your best to make life better for future generations of people. And even with COVID, I mean, the big challenge facing the U.S. today and the world is to take the lessons of COVID and then to put in place the work that needs to be done now to be better prepared for the inevitability of that happening again. There will be another pandemic. We handled the last one pretty well despite not being as prepared as we should. So there's no excuse now for not being prepared for the next one. But people have a tendency to go through a crisis. During the crisis, talk about all the things they're going to do to prepare for the next one, and then when the crisis is over, they forget about it. That's short-sighted.
Yeah.
So I think, in fact, I'm currently involved with a group of people thinking about what do we do now to be much better prepared for the inevitability of another one. We just can't sit back and relax and be comfortable. If you get complacent, you're going to walk yourself back into problems that you should prevent. So we have a very special obligation. Similarly with climate change and what we do to the environment, we've got to be careful, very careful about, because that's a huge issue. How we deal with the issue of food insecurity, for example. How do we deal with the issue of human trafficking, which we're heavily involved in? You know, part of Long Island has the highest incidence of human trafficking, one of the highest incidence of human trafficking in the United States. That's a huge issue. We've got to talk about these things. We've got to be willing to stand up and deal and address these issues. That's what leadership is about, in my view. You have, when you're the CEO of an organization, you have an obligation internally to your organization, which is to make your organization as good as possible. And then you have an obligation, in my view, to be, which is external, to do those things and address those things and make people aware of those things that are harmful to the community at large. We're all part of one major, major family. We're all interconnected. We're all interdependent. We can't just sit in our silos and say it's okay. That to me is what leadership is all about. You don't want to just exist. You just don't want to go along during life just to go along for the ride. You want to make sure you leave behind something that is better for your kids and your grandkids. That's the judgment, and that's what we should be judged by. So I'm very fortunate to be working with people who similarly believe in these things, and there is so much that we have to address. I mean, I'll mention one other thing. I mean, the toxic nature of our politics today is so disgusting. You know, can you imagine kids listening to some of our political leaders today bashing each other, calling each other's names, not willing to sit down and compromise and deal on anything? Anybody that disagrees with them, they call them the enemy. And I'm not talking about all of our political leaders, but right. The dominant group. That's a terrible, terrible scenario for kids to be watching. How do we expect them to grow up in a civil, humane way, respecting other people when our leadership doesn't do it? So we all of us have a role here. We can't just sit on the sidelines and say, oh, I'm not willing to play the game. You've got to be in the arena, play the game.
Leadership, and we're very proud of our own. The County Limerick-born leader Mike Dowling, who is the president and CEO of Northwell Health. Thank you for your time, and again, it's always a pleasure.
Thank you so much, it's a wonderful week after St. Patrick's Week. We as Irish should be very, very happy and fortunate. We should be happy and fortunate to be Irish, to be American, and to be Irish-American. We're a very fortunate group of people. Thank you.
Not going to try to top that. Thank you, my darling. And friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network USA, irishradio.com, worldwide.